Welcome to episode 75 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's just going to be a relatively quick episode this week because I've been a little pushed for time for one reason or another. So today I'm going to touch on a few things that are currently in the fore of my mind. Namely, how I'm currently using my Epson P5000 portable storage that Santa brought me, and a few thoughts on a photo exhibition that I visited recently. So let's get right into it. Firstly today, I want to talk about my new Epson P5000, which is a multimedia storage viewer, more commonly known as a portable storage. This isn't going to be a new topic for many people. The majority of your listeners already know that the main use for this device is that it just basically enables you to back up images from your memory card in the field without having to get to a PC to transfer images and make a backup. The Epson portable storage also has a great quality 4-inch screen that allows you to check the images in the field or back at the hotel later, and at larger sizes than on the back of my camera. So with the P5000, I can also zoom in on RAW files to check to a certain extent if they're sharp enough, or just sort of check the detail, the depth of field, etc. This, if I recall correctly, only works with the embedded preview rather than actually zooming in on the raw data. So how much you can zoom depends on the size of the embedded image. With JPEG, though, you can zoom in about 4 times closer as it uses the actual photo rather than the embedded preview image. Not wanting to really do like a full preview of the P5000 today, though, rather I wanted to briefly cover a few of the obvious benefits of using portable storage, and then talk about one particular feature that I didn't even know about before buying the P5000, and that I have found probably gives me more peace of mind in the field when deleting images from my memory cards than, you know, I really hadn't expected this additional benefit. So I wanted to go into that a little bit more. So the obvious benefits of backing up to portable storage while out and about is that I can delete the images from my memory card once they've been backed up to the device, and then reuse the memory card to shoot more photos. So this means that I don't need to buy enough memory cards to last me the entire length of a shoot or a photography trip. You can, of course, take a laptop PC and back up your images to that, but I carry so much photography equipment when I go away, from home especially, you know, when I leave and go on longer trips, that I really don't want to weigh myself down with any more than I really have to. So the problem with this until now, though, has been that it's always a worry when you delete the images from the memory cards to reuse them, leaving you with just one backup of the image on the portable storage. I have in the past, well, touch wood, to date, not lost any hard disks on my computer and in a portable storage unit. But there's always, of course, the danger of that a hard disk can just give up the ghost at any time. And if that's the only backup that you have your images on, the single hard disk, then you'd effectively lose everything that you'd shot to that point. You could also lose the device itself, of course. Now, how paranoid you get about this depends on your personality, I guess, but I'm really a pretty paranoid person about these sort of things. And I even ask the people at airports to hand-check my portable storage rather than passing it through the X-ray machine, just in case it fries the hard disk. Which, at least in Japan, by the way, they always seem to be happy to do. Anyway, I always wanted a second backup of my images before deleting them from the memory card and reformatting. I've heard of devices that burn a CD or DVD directly from the portable storage, and of course there's always taking a laptop, as I just mentioned, to make that double backup, and I have tried that. But that really defeats the object of the portable storage, or the reason that I want the portable storage in the first place. Unless, of course, you have so few memory cards that you have to literally format the card in the field. What I tend to do is carry enough memory to be able to shoot for a full day, and although I sometimes back up in the middle of the day to the portable storage while out, I don't delete the card until the end of the day after making a second backup. So, before I ramble on too much, what is this great new feature that makes all of this possible with the P5000? Well, basically, you can now attach a different USB storage device, such as a hard disk, to the P5000 and do a full backup of all of your card backups to the external device. All you have to do is attach the device and just select Copy All Backup Files from the USB device menu, and the P5000 will create a directory on your USB hard drive and copy all of the files that you've backed up to date onto the P5000. It'll back them up onto the USB device. Another major plus, if you then back up more cards, is that the next time you run copy all backup files, it only copies the new ones to the USB hard drive, so you don't waste a lot of time just recopying everything. For my second backup, I bought a really small in size, but 100 gigabyte Logitech external hard drive with a shockproof body. This is one of the really small ones. I actually uploaded a photo of the P5000 and the Logitech drive to my website. So you can view this as image number 1305. Although it doesn't look this way from the perspective that I shot the image, at just under 14 centimeters by 8 centimeters, the Logitech drive is actually smaller than the Epson P5000. So very easy to carry around with me. One drawback is that although the P5000 will power the external device via USB, the USB cable itself, it's not strong enough, or there's not enough power to power the Logitech device that I bought, despite it being USB powered as well and supposedly quite energy efficient. So when the single USB is not enough, you simply have to plug in a second power cable that actually also gets its feed from another USB port, and then you're away. That's with this particular drive that I bought. Of course, though, to get a second USB port, you might think that I need a PC, again defeating the object of the exercise. So, but the thing is with this thing, that's not really so, because it requires 5 volts at 5 watts, and if you take a look at your little white iPod power adapter, for those of you that have an iPod, that uses a USB cable as well. You just plug in the same USB cable to the adapter to power your, or to charge your iPod from the mains, and it serves up 5 volts at 5 watts. So I'm simply using this to power my Logitech drive while I'm backing up. This does mean that I need power, but I always carry enough memory cards for at least one day's shooting. And if I'm out in my car, I have a 120-volt power supply too, so I don't really need to worry about this myself. So you can also view the backed-up contents of the external drive and save other data on there as well, if necessary. It doesn't simply create a mirror of the drive contents, so if you have a drive more than 80 gigabytes, which is the capacity of the P5000, you can use it for other storage. I believe you can also copy files to the external storage direct from the memory card and individually from backed up data as well. So, the options are quite practical. If you have enough external storage, you could actually stay on the road for quite some time without coming up for air. The device can be used to store and playback music and video too, but I personally don't use the music feature much, though I am storing a copy of my portfolio in the portfolio slideshow that you can see from my website. I'm storing that in video format So this allows me to just pass around the device for someone to look at the slideshow in a kind of personal viewing. Or I can attach an optional AV cable to the device and just plug it into a TV, and then the video and the sound will be displayed on the TV or a projector or things like that. So I can then play my portfolio on a larger screen. And I've not used this yet, apart from just to try it out, make sure it works. But this is one of the features that I liked in my original P2000. And I really wanted to make sure that that was there before I upgraded, as I really liked the ability to do that. The P2000, by the way, is a 40 gigabyte version with slightly less features, as it's quite a lot older. But it's a much earlier version of the Epson storage, portable storage. The major drive for me to upgrade was disk space. But the ability to create second backups, which is, as I say, something I didn't even know about when I bought the unit, is really what made me a lot more pleased that I upgraded. So the reasons that I didn't have time to prepare for today's podcast over the week, last weekend really, despite Monday the 12th being a national holiday, is that instead of preparing in my free time, on the Monday, which was really the only free time that I did get over the weekend, I decided to go to the Tokyo Metropolitan Museum of Photography to see a photograph exhibition called Mediations on Gaia, New Horizons in Nature Photography. The word Gaia didn't register immediately, and my Greek mythology is obviously rusty, so I looked it up and found that Gaia Telos, or Terra in Roman, is the goddess of earth, or the land, as in terra firma. So Gaia is the daughter of chaos and the mother of Cronus and Titan, and the word also, though, can apparently be used as a metaphor for a set of like philosophical views based on the ecosystems and the concept of a living planet. This is all stuff really from Wikipedia, where I looked into this. So, you know, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But also, it can be used to mean a group of scientific theories about how life on Earth may regulate the planet's biosphere to make it more hospitable to life itself. And then, you know, this is all sort of basically like formulating opinions around the consequences of the brewing climate to storms. So I don't know exactly how much the word was intended to be taken, in which way the word was intended to be taken in the title, Mediations on Gaia. But with global warming affecting the world around us, the way it is, I can probably speculate somewhat, but I'm not going to really go into that now. As I said, I don't have a lot of time today either to prepare or to record. So I'm just really sort of, you know, going to go on to this second topic that I want to talk about. But anyway, I'm sorry that I put this above getting you this week's podcast a few days earlier, which would have been on schedule. But I have to tell you that I'm really, really pleased that I did. I found that the exhibition was absolutely fabulous. Oh, yeah, that sounds like a title of a tacky yet pretty funny sitcom, but it was really, really fabulous. If you happen to live or are in the Tokyo area this week, then you have just a few days left to see it, but it closes on February the 18th, so you're almost out of time. But if you are in town, then I just suggest that you get over there quickly and take a look. I can definitely recommend a visit. The exhibition at this pretty prestigious gallery was apparently conceived to help established yet not yet as well known Japanese photographers to showcase their work, in the hope of helping them to sort of step up. The three photographers are Takayuki Maekawa, Tetsuo Kikuchi, and Meiki Lin. All of their work is excellent, mixing mostly good at the minimum, good shots to great shots, and then with some really, really stunning images in there as well. The photographer that stuck out to me really was Takayuki Maekawa. The work being exhibited was wildlife shots from Hokkaido, Alaska, and Canada. And the shot that really stood out to me the most was one of a black bear almost totally in shadow with just its face visible. And it's got like a half-eaten salmon hanging out of its mouth. And I can't describe this image sufficiently in words, so I'm not even going to try. But I have put a link to it on Takayuki Maekawa's website. I've put that into the show notes. The web version doesn't have the smack that the 6-foot-tall version did that I looked at the exhibition, but you'll hopefully be able to appreciate what grabbed me. There were a number of other incredible, stunning images, but this one is the one that really just stopped me in my tracks and held me for a number of minutes. I went back to look at all of Takayuki's work at the end of, after viewing the other two people's work, which is also great. I went back on the way out of the gallery, but once again I find myself standing in front of this particular image for a long, long time. It's just wonderful. So Takayuki Maekawa himself was standing in the entrance of the gallery as I started to leave, so I complimented him on his work and asked about buying an original print of the black bear shot. I got his contact details and I intend to contact him over the next few days. As long as the work is not sort of, the cost is not restrictively high, I'll hopefully be able to pick up a print or two for my collection of other people's work that I'm slowly working on. So this will be really just an amazing addition, though. I'm really hoping that I can work something out. I found it interesting that one of the other pitches for this exhibition was that the director of art at the museum wants to kickstart nature and wildlife photography in Japan. I must say that very much of the photography you see in Japan is of everyday scenes. There are, of course, some incredibly talented photographers in all fields, but the majority of photographs entered for competitions, for example, seem to be more of like people in everyday situations or festivals. And nature photography, although has a place, doesn't really seem to dominate or in any way. It's really just a small fraction. So I, for one, would like to see a lot more interest in nature photography here in Japan, as I would like to see more interest in buying original prints, for private collectors. I have to admit that I have yet to sell a single print to a Japanese customer, despite my living here and selling from here. Pretty much all of my own print sales go to the States, and with some from Europe and Australia, and the rest from the rest of the world, obviously, but to date, not one in Japan. Buying or displaying or collecting prints is just not common over here. So any movement towards this would also be very welcome. It would also enable me to start matting my work. I'm really going off the rails a little bit here, but it would enable me to start matting my work and shipping it totally finished and not rolled up in a tube, as I currently ship the sales that I do make. This is okay, and the prints arrive in one piece now 100% of the time, rather than a few hit and misses that I had in the early days when I was using slightly weaker tubes. But now I have good strong tubes that, the prints are all getting there in one piece. But I'd really like to be able to actually just finish things totally matted and send them out in a box without having to roll them up. But that's, I think part of that is just because my interest in the actual the activity of matting. I think it would be fun to do that all myself, and then just sort of hold the totally finished product rather than the print, which, as I said a few weeks ago, I did an episode about the importance and how great it feels to actually hold a print. So I'm not belittling that in any way. That is a very important part of photography. But to take it one step further and do the matting and that as well would be really, really fun, I think. So from a totally selfish reason. I'd just like to be able to take it that extra step before shipping the work out. So really, you know, not quite as short as I thought it was going to be. I'm at 20 minutes now, I see on the timer, on the software that I used to record this podcast with. But just a few dissipated thoughts there. I didn't have time to really prepare very much for this week, and just spoke a little bit about the things that are at the fore of my mind. Visiting galleries is really great. I tend to go to the one here in Tokyo, or a few here in Tokyo, when there's you know, genres that I'm interested in being shown. And you know, I think it's great if you can, you know, if you have the same opportunities near yourself, then you know, take a trip down there. It can really sort of enrich you and help to inspire you in many ways, taking a look at other people's work. Of course, buying photography books as well is another thing that I really like doing. Got quite a large collection, so it's probably similar things, looking at people's works, learning from them. I think in the earlier stages of people's photography, not so much careers, but photographic life, it's great to emulate other people's work, but really to sort of get the techniques down and sort of get an eye for the composition rather than just trying to copy it and you know, and use that as your own. But anyway, that's it for this week. Just a few things to mention before we close. First thing is that I'm pleased to say that this week was the first time that I met with a podcast listener in person. I've been contacted a number of times in the past, but the timing was never really quite right, and it just hasn't happened so far. But this week I spent Tuesday night with Larry Lim and his wife E-Lin from Singapore, and Larry is in Japan with E-Lin on holiday and had contacted me a while back to set up a meeting. And so me and my better half went over to meet them, and we had dinner on Tuesday night. So that was great to catch up with the first listener that I've actually met up with. So thanks to Larry and E-Lin for a wonderful evening, and it was really nice to meet you in person. Next week I'll hopefully have gotten through the post-processing of some shots from my recent visit to England. I didn't do much photography while I was there, but a day at the zoo and a few sessions one day at the local nature reserve might give me something to share with you that might be of interest in. So you know, maybe we'll start to look at that over the next few weeks. To be honest though, I've simply not found time to look through the shots yet, so it might not even be next week. But you know, we'll have to wait and see. Finally, a quick reminder that the silence assignment will be finished in a few days. So to put yourself in a position to win the Lowepro Stealth Reporter D650 AW camera bag, please get your entry uploaded to the mvpgalleries.com website in the assignment album before the end of February the 18th, which is this coming Sunday. Voting will be started from Monday the 19th for 2 weeks to find the winner of this current assignment, and then we'll kick off the next assignment at the same time as announcing the winner of the silence assignment, and the you know, that will all be done in the podcast following following the voting. So you know, looking forward to that. Seeing some great shots being uploaded there already. Just you know, looking forward to the next few days and see what the final uploads bring. So that is it for this week. Have a great week, whether you're rushing to get your assignment photo shot or whatever you're doing. Bye bye.
Photocastnetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. Photocastnetwork.com.